Time is a river like the one above us. Demeter lifted his head and pointed with his chin to Oceanus, the endless river of stars that flowed from horizon to horizon across the sky above them. It has no beginning and no ending. There was another who came before me, as countless others came before me. He passed on this duty to me. It is a divine baton, handed on from one runner to the next. Some carry it further than others. My race is almost run, for I have been shorn of much of my power. I must pass the baton to you. Why to me? It has been ordained. It is not for us to query or contest the decision. You must open your mind to me, Taita, to receive what I have to give you. I must caution you that it is a poisoned gift. Once you receive it, you may never again know lasting peace, for you are about to shoulder all the suffering and pain of the world. They fell silent while Taita considered this bleak proposition. At last he sighed. I would refuse if I could. Continue, Demeter, for I cannot stand against the inevitable. Demeter nodded. I have faith that you will succeed where I have failed so woefully. You are to become gatekeeper of the fortress of the truth against the onslaughts of the minions of the lie. Demeter's whispers grew bolder and took on a new urgency. We have spoken of gods and demigods, of adepts and benevolent immortals. From this I see that you already have a deep understanding of these things. But I can tell you more. Since the beginning of time, of the great chaos, the gods have been lifted up and cast down in succession. They have struggled against each other and against the minions of the lie. The Titans, who were the elder gods, were cast down by the Olympian gods. They, in their turn, will become enfeebled. None will trust and worship them. They will be defeated and replaced by younger deities, or, if we fail, they may be superseded by the malign agents of the lie. He was silent for a while, but when he continued, his voice was firmer. This rise and fall of divine dynasties is part of the natural and immutable body of laws that emerge to bring order to the great chaos. Those laws govern the cosmos. They order the ebb and flood of the tides. They command the succession of day and night. They order and control the wind and the storm, the volcanoes and the tidal waves, the rise and fall of empires, and the progression of days and nights. The gods are only the servants of the truth. In the end there remains only the truth and the lie. Demeter turned suddenly and glanced behind him, his expression melancholy but resigned. Do you feel it, Taita? Do you hear it? Taita exerted all his powers, and at last he heard a faint rustling in the air around him, like the wings of vultures settling to a carrion feast. He nodded. He was too moved to speak. The sense of great evil almost overwhelmed him. He had to exert all his strength to fight it back. She is here with us already. Demeter's voice sank lower, became laboured and breathless, as though his lungs were crushed by the weight of a baleful presence. Can you smell her? He asked. Taita flared his nostrils and caught the faint reek of corruption and decay, disease and rotting flesh, the effluvium of plague and the contents of ruptured bowels. I sense it and smell it, he answered. We are in danger, said Demeter. He reached towards Taita. Join hands, he ordered. We must unite our power to resist her. As their fingers touched, an intense blue spark flashed between them. Taita resisted the impulse to jerk away his hand and break the contact. Instead, he seized Demeter's hands and held them firmly. Strength flowed back and forth between them. Gradually, the malign presence receded and they could breathe freely again. It was inevitable, said Demeter with resignation. She has been searching for me these past centuries ever since I escaped from her web of spells and charms. But now that you and I have come together, we have created such an upheaval of psychic energy that she has been able to detect it, even at immense distance, just as a great shark can detect a shoal of sardines long before it has sight of them. He looked sorrowfully at Taita, still holding his hands. She knows of you now, Taita, through me, and if not through me, She would have discovered you by some other means. The scent you leave on the wind of the cosmos is strong, and she is the ultimate predator. You say she. Who is this female? She calls herself Eos. I have heard that name. A woman named Eos visited the temple of Saraswati more than 50 generations ago. It is the same woman. Eos is the ancient goddess of the dawn, sister of Helios, the sun, Taita said. She was an insatiable nymphomaniac, but she was destroyed in the war between the Titans and the Olympians. He shook his head. This cannot be the same, Eos. You are right, Taita. They are not the same. This Eos is the minion of the lie. She is the consummate impostor, the usurper, the deceiver, the thief, the devourer of infants. She has stolen the identity of the old goddess. At the same time, she adopted her vices, but none of her virtues. Do I understand you to say that Eos has lived for 50 generations? That means she is 2,000 years old, Taita exclaimed, incredulous. What is she, mortal or immortal? Human or goddess? In the beginning she was human. Many ages ago she was the high priestess at the temple of Apollo in Ilion. When the city was sacked by the Spartans, she escaped the pillage and assumed the name Eos. Still human, but I have no words to describe what she has become. Samana showed me the ancient temple inscription that recorded the visit of the woman from Ilion, Taita said. She is the same. Karma gave her the gift of the inner eye. He believed that she was chosen. Her powers of concealment and deceit are so powerful and persuasive that even Karma, that great sage and savant, could not see through them. If she is the embodiment of evil, surely it is our duty to seek her out and destroy her. Demeter smiled ruefully. I have devoted all my long life to that purpose, but she is as cunning as she is evil. She is as elusive as the wind. She emits no aura. She is able to protect herself with spells and wiles that far surpass my own knowledge of the occult. She lays snares to catch those who search for her. She can move with ease from one continent to another. Karma merely enhanced her powers. Nonetheless, I once succeeded in finding her. He corrected himself. That is not entirely true. I did not find her. She sought me out. Taita leant forward eagerly. You know this creature? You have met her face to face? Tell me, Demeter, what is her appearance? If she is threatened, she can change her appearance as a chameleon does. Yet vanity is among her multitudinous vices. You cannot imagine the beauty she is able to assume. It stuns the senses and negates reason. When she takes on this aspect, no man can resist her. The sight of her reduces even the most noble soul to the level of a beast. He fell silent, his eyes dulled with sorrow. Despite all my training as an adept, I was not able to restrain my basest instincts. I lost the ability and the inclination to reckon consequences. For me, in that moment, nothing but her existed. I was consumed by lust. She toyed with me, like the winds of autumn with a dead leaf. To me it seemed she gave me everything, every delight contained in this earth. She gave me her body. He groaned softly. Even now the memory drives me to the brink of madness. Each rise and swell, enchanted opening and fragrant cleft. I did not try to resist her, for no mortal man could do so. A faint, agitated colour had risen to his wan features. Taita, you remarked that the original Eos was an insatiable nymphomaniac, and that is so. But this other Eos outstrips her in appetite. When she kisses, she sucks out the vital juices of her lover, as you or I might suck out the juices from a ripe orange. When she takes a man between her thighs, in that exquisite but infernal coupling, she draws out of him his very substance. She takes from him his soul. His substance is the ambrosia that nourishes her. She is as some monstrous vampire that feeds on human blood. She chooses only superior beings as her victims, men and women of good mind, servants of the truth, a magus of illustrious reputation, or a gifted seer. Once she detects her victim, She runs him down as relentlessly as a wolf harries a deer. She is omnivorous, no matter age or appearance, physical frailty or imperfection. It is not their flesh that feeds her appetites, but their souls. She devours young and old, men and women. Once she has them in her thrall, wrapped in her silken web, she draws from them their accumulated store of learning, wisdom, and experience. She sucks it out through their mouths with her accursed kisses. She draws it from their loins in her loathsome embrace. She leaves only a desiccated husk. "I have witnessed this carnal exchange," Taita said. "When Kashyap reached the end of his life, he passed on his wisdom and learning to Samana, whom he had chosen as his successor. What you witnessed was a willing exchange. The obscene act Eos practices is a carnal invasion and conquest. She is a ravager and devourer of souls." For a while, Taita was dumbstruck. Then he asked, "Ancient and infirm? Whole or maimed, man and woman? How does she couple with those who are no longer capable of union? She has powers that you and I, adepts though we may be, cannot emulate or even fathom. She has developed the art of regenerating the frail flesh of her victims for a day, only to destroy them by wiping away their minds and their very substance." "Nevertheless, you have not answered my question, Demeter. What is she? Mortal or immortal, human or goddess? Does this rare beauty she possess know no term? Is she not as vulnerable to the ravages of time and age as you and I?" "My answer to your question, Taita, is that I know not. She may well be the oldest woman on earth." Demeter spread his hands in a gesture of helplessness. "But she seems to have discovered some power previously known only to the gods. Does that make her a goddess? I do not know. She may not be immortal, but she is certainly ageless." "What do you propose, Demeter? How will we trace her to her lair?" "She has already found you. You have excited her monstrous appetites. You do not have to seek her out. She is already stalking you. She will draw you to her." "Demeter, I am long past any temptations and snares that even this creature can place in my path. She wants you. She must have you. However, you and I together pose a threat to her." He thought for a while about his own statement, then went on. "She has already taken from me almost everything I can give her. She will want to rid herself of me and isolate you, but at the same time she must see to it that no harm comes to you. Alone you will find it almost impossible to resist her. With our combined forces we may be able to repel her and even find a way to put her apparent immortality to the test." "I am glad to have you at my side," said Taita. Demeter did not respond at once. He studied Taita with a strange new expression. At last he asked quietly, "You feel no sense of dread? No premonition of disaster?" "No, I believe that you and I can succeed," Taita told him. "You have considered my solemn warnings. You understand the powers against which we will pit ourselves. Yet you do not hesitate? You entertain no doubts? You, who are the wisest of men, how can you explain this?" "I know it is inevitable. I must face her with boldness and good heart." "Taita, search the innermost recesses of your soul. Do you detect in yourself a sense of elation? When last did you feel so vigorous, so vital?" Taita looked thoughtful, but did not answer. "Taita, you must be entirely truthful with yourself. Do you feel like a warrior marching to a battle you may not survive? Or do you find in your breast another unwarranted emotion? Do you feel reckless of all consequences, like a young swain hurrying to a lover's tryst?" Taita remained silent, but his mien changed. The light flush of his cheeks subsided and his eyes became sober. "I am not afraid," he said at last. "Tell me, truly. Your mind swarms with prurient images and unconscionable yearnings, does it not?" Taita covered his eyes and clenched his jaw. Demeter went on remorselessly. She has already infected you with her evil. She has begun to bind you with her spells and temptations. She will twist your judgment. Soon you will begin to doubt that she is evil. She will seem to you fine, noble, and as virtuous as any woman who ever lived. Soon it will seem that I am the evil one, who has poisoned your mind against her. When that happens, she will have divided us, and I will be destroyed. You will surrender yourself to her freely and willingly. She will have triumphed over both of us." Taita shook his whole body, as though to rid himself of a swarm of poisonous insects. "Forgive me, Demeter," he cried. "Now that you warn me of what she is doing, I can feel the enervating weakness welling within me. I was losing control of judgment and reason. What you say is true. I find myself haunted by strange longings. Great Horus, shield me!" Taita groaned. "I never thought to know such agony again. I thought myself long past the torments of desire." "The contrary emotions that assail you spring not from your wisdom and reason. They are an infection of the spirit, a poisoned arrow shot from the bow of the great witch. I was once harassed by her in the same manner. You can see the state to which I have been reduced. However, I have learned how to survive. Teach me. Help me to withstand her, Demeter. I have unwittingly led Eos to you. I believed I had eluded her, but she has used me as a hunting hound to lead her to you, her next victim. But now we must stand together as one. That is the only way we can hope to withstand her onslaughts. However, before all else, we must leave Galala. We cannot rest long in one place. If she is uncertain of our exact whereabouts, it will be more difficult for her to focus her powers upon us. Between us, we must weave a perpetual screen of concealment to cover our movements. Meron! Taita called urgently. He was swiftly at his master's side. How soon can we be ready to leave Galala? I will bring the horses with all haste. But where are we going, master? Thebes and Karnak, Taita replied, and glanced at Demeter. He nodded agreement. We must muster all support from every source, temporal as well as spiritual. Pharaoh is the chosen of the gods and the most powerful of men, Taita agreed. And you are the chief of his favourites, said Demeter. We must leave this very night to go to him. Taita rode Windsmoke, and Meron followed closely on one of the other horses they had brought from the plains of Ecbatana. Demeter lay in his swaying litter high on the back of his camel, Taita alongside him. The litter curtains were open and they could converse easily over the other soft sounds of the caravan, the creak and jingle of tack, the fall of the horses' hooves and camels' pads on the yellow sand, the low voices of the servants and guards. During the night they stopped twice to rest and water the animals. At each halt Taita and Demeter performed the spell of concealment. Their combined powers were formidable, and the screen they wove seemed impervious. Although they scried the silences of the night around them before they mounted and moved on, neither could detect any further sign of Eos's baleful presence. "She has lost us for the moment, but we will always be at risk, and most vulnerable when we sleep. We should never do so at the same time," Demeter advised. "We will never again relax our vigilance," Taita asserted. "I will keep up my guard against careless mistakes. I had underestimated our enemy, allowed Eos to take me by surprise. I am ashamed of my weakness and stupidity." "I am 100 times deeper in guilt than you are," Demeter admitted. "I fear my powers are waning fast, Taita. I should have guided you, but I behaved like a novice. We can afford no further lapses. We must seek out the weaknesses in our enemy and attack her there, but without exposing ourselves." "Despite all you have told me, my knowledge and understanding of Eos is pitifully inadequate. You must recall every detail about her that you discovered during your ordeal, no matter how trivial or seemingly insignificant," Taita told him. "Or I am blind, while she holds every advantage." "You are the stronger of we two," Demeter said, "but you are right. Remember how swift her reaction was when you and I came together and she descried our combined forces. Within hours of our first meeting she could overlook us. From now on her attacks upon me will become more relentless and vicious. We must not rest until I have passed on to you all that I have learnt about her. We do not know how long we will be together before she kills me or drives a wedge between us. Every hour is precious. Taita nodded. Then let us begin with the most important matters. I know who she is and where she came from. Next, I must know her whereabouts. Where is she, Demeter? Where can we find her? She has hidden in numerous lairs since she escaped from the temple of Apollo when Agamemnon and his brother Menelaus sacked Ilion so long ago. Where did you have your fateful encounter with her? On an island in the Middle Sea, which has since become the stronghold of the Sea People, that nation of corsairs and pirates. At that time she lived on the slopes of a great burning mountain she named Etna, a volcano that spewed forth fire and brimstone and sent clouds of poisoned smoke to the very heavens. That was long ago, centuries before either you or I was born. Taita chuckled dryly. Yes, indeed, it was long ago. His expression hardened again. Is it possible that Eos may still be at Etna? She is no longer there, Demeter replied without hesitation. How can you be certain? By the time I broke free of her, my body was shattered in health and vitality, my mind unhinged, and my psychic forces were almost dispersed by the ordeal through which she had put me. I was her prisoner for little more than a decade, but I aged a lifetime for each of those years. Nevertheless, I was able to take advantage of a mighty eruption of the volcano to conceal my flight, and I had help from the priests of a small insignificant god whose temple lay in the valley below Etna's eastern slopes. They spirited me across the narrow straits to the mainland in a tiny boat, and led me to sanctuary in another temple of their sect, hidden in the mountains, where they placed me in the care of their brothers. Those good priests helped me to reassemble what remained of my powers, which I needed to intercept a singularly virulent spell that Eos sent after me. "Could you turn it back upon her?" Taita demanded. "Were you able to wound her with her own magic?" She may have become complacent because she underestimated my remaining strength and did not protect herself adequately. I aimed my return strike at her essence, which I could still see with my inner eye. She was close at hand. Only the narrow strait of water stood between us. My riposte flew true and hit her hard. I heard her cry of agony echo across the ether. Then she disappeared, and I believed for a while that I had destroyed her. My hosts made discreet inquiries from their brothers in the temple below the mountain of Etna. We heard from them that she had vanished, and that her former abode was deserted. I wasted no time in taking advantage of my victory. As soon as I was strong enough, I left my sanctuary and travelled to the furthest ends of the earth, to the continent of ice, as far from Eos as I could go. At last I found a place where I could lie quiescent, as still as a frightened frog beneath a stone. It was as well that I did so. After a very short time, 50 years or less, I felt the resurgence of Eos, my enemy. Her powers seemed to have been mightily enhanced. The ether around me hummed with the vicious darts she hurled at random after me. She could not place me precisely, and although many of her barbs came close to where I lay, none struck home. Each day after that was one of survival, while I found the one who had been ordained to succeed me. I did not make the error of responding to her attacks. Each time I sensed her closing in, I moved on quietly to another hiding place. At last I realized that there was only one place on this earth where she would never look for me again. I returned secretly to Etna, and concealed myself in the caverns that had once been her abode and my dungeon. The echoes of her evil presence must have been so strong still that they disguised my own feeble presence. I remained hidden on the mountain, and in time I felt her interest in me fade. Her search became desultory, and at last ceased. Perhaps she believed that I had perished, or that she had obliterated my powers, so I no longer posed a threat. I waited in secret until the joyous day that I felt your presence stirring. When the priestess of Saraswati opened your inner eye, I felt the disturbance it created on the ether. Then the star you call Lostris appeared to me. I rallied my scattered resolve and followed it to you. After Demeter had finished, Taita was silent for a time. He sat hunched on windsmoke, swaying to her easy motion, his cloak wrapped about his head, only his eyes showing through a slit. So, if she is not at Etna, he said eventually, where is she, Demeter? I have told you that I do not know. You must know, even though you think you do not, Taita contradicted him. How long did you abide with her? 10 years, you said? 10 years, Demeter agreed. Each year was an eternity. Then you know her as no other living being. You have absorbed part of her. She has left traces of herself on and in you. She took from me. She gave nothing, Demeter replied. You took from her also, perhaps not in the same measure, but no coupling of man and woman is completely barren. You have knowledge of her still. Maybe it is so painful to you that you have hidden it even from yourself. Let me help you to retrieve it. Taita took on the role of inquisitor. He was ruthless, making no allowances for his victim's great age, his weaknesses and afflictions of both body and spirit. He strove to draw from him every memory he still possessed of the great witch, no matter how faint or deeply suppressed it was. Day after day he ransacked the old man's mind, and they did not break their journey. They travelled at night to escape the savage desert sun, and camped before dawn broke. As soon as Demeter's tent had been raised, they took shelter from the sunrise, and Taita resumed his questioning. Gradually he conceived strong affection and admiration for Demeter, as he came to understand the full extent of the old man's suffering, the courage and fortitude he had required to survive Eos's persecutions over such a vast span. But he did not allow pity to deter him from his task. At last, it seemed there remained nothing more for Taita to learn. But he was not satisfied. Demeter's revelations seemed superficial and mundane. "There is a spell practiced by the priests of Ahura Mazda in Babylon," he told Demeter at last. "They can send a man into a deep trance that is close to death itself. Then they are able to direct his mind back great distances in time and space, to the very day of his birth. Every detail of his life, every word he ever spoke or heard, every voice and every face becomes clear to him." "Yes," Demeter agreed. "I have heard these matters spoken of. Are you privy to this art, Taita?" "Do you trust me? Will you submit yourself to me?" Demeter closed his eyes in weary resignation. "There is nothing left within me. I am a dried-out husk from which you have sucked every drop as ravenously as the witch herself." He wiped a claw-like hand across his face and massaged his closed eyes. Then he opened them. "I submit myself to you. Work the spell over me if you are able." Taita held up the golden periapt before his eyes and let it swing gently on its chain. "Concentrate on this golden star. Drive every other thought from your mind. See nothing but the star. Hear nothing but my voice. You are weary to the depths of your soul, Demeter. You must sleep. Let yourself fall into sleep. Let sleep close over your head like a soft fur blanket. Sleep, Demeter. Sleep." Slowly the old man relaxed. His eyelids quivered and were still. He lay like a corpse upon a bier, snoring softly. One of his eyelids drooped open, and behind it the eye was rolled back so that only the white showed, blind and opaque. He seemed to have sunk into a deep trance, but when Taita asked him a question, he answered. His voice was blurred and weak, the tone reedy. "Go back, Demeter. Go back along the river of time."
"Yes," Demeter responded. "I am rolling back the years. Back, back,
back." His voice grew stronger, more vigorous. "Where are you now?"
"I stand at the Etemen Anki, the foundation of heaven and earth," he replied in a vital young voice.
Taita knew the building well, an immense structure in the centre of Babylon. The walls were of glazed bricks, in all the colours of earth and sky, shaped into a mighty pyramid. "What do you see, Demeter?"
"I see a great open space, the very centre of the world, the axis of earth and heaven."
"Do you see walls and high terraces?
There are no walls, but I see the workmen and slaves. They are as many as the ants of the earth and locusts of the sky. I hear their voices. Then Demeter spoke in many tongues, a mighty babble of humanity. Taita recognized some of the languages he spoke, but others were obscure. Suddenly, Demeter cried out in ancient Sumerian, "Let us build a tower whose height may reach unto heaven." With astonishment, Taita realized that he was witnessing the laying of the foundations of the Tower of Babel. He had travelled back to the beginning of time. "Now you are journeying through the centuries. You see the E-Temen Anki reach to its full height, and kings worshipping the gods Bel and Marduk on its summit. Come forward in time," Taita directed him, and through Demeter's eyes he witnessed the rise of great empires and the fall of mighty kings, as Demeter described events that had been lost and forgotten in antiquity. He heard the voices of men and women who had returned to dust centuries before. At last Demeter faltered, and his voice lost its strength. Taita laid a hand on his brow, which was as cool as a gravestone. "Peace, Demeter," he whispered. "Sleep now. Leave your memories to the ages. Return to the present." Demeter shuddered and relaxed. He slept until sunset, then woke as naturally and calmly as though nothing unusual had occurred. He seemed refreshed and fortified. He ate the fruit Taita had brought to him with good appetite and drank the soured goat's milk, while the retainers struck camp, then loaded the tents and baggage onto the camels. When the caravan started out, he was strong enough to walk a short way beside Taita. "What memories did you extort from me while I slept?" he asked with a smile. "I remember nothing." "So nothing it must have been." "You were present when the foundations of E-Temen Anki were dug and laid," Taita told him. Demeter stopped short and turned to him with amazement. "I told you that?" In reply, Taita mimicked some of the voices and languages Demeter had used in his trance. At once Demeter identified each utterance. His legs soon tired, but his enthusiasm was unaffected. He mounted his palanquin and stretched out on the mattress. Taita rode beside him, and they continued their conversation throughout the long night. At last Demeter asked a question that was central in both their minds. "Did I speak of Eos? Were you able to uncover some hidden memory?" Taita shook his head. "I was careful not to alarm you. I did not broach the matter directly, but allowed your memories to range freely." "Like a hunter with a pack of hounds," Demeter suggested with a sudden surprising cackle. "Ha ha! Take care, Taita, that while casting for a stag, you do not startle a man-devouring lioness." "Your memories reach so far that trying to trace Eos is like voyaging across the widest ocean in search of a particular shark among a great multitude. We might spend another lifetime before we stumble by chance upon your memories of her." "You must direct me to her," Demeter said without hesitation. "I am fearful for your safety, perhaps even your life," Taita demurred. "Shall we send out the hounds again on the morrow? This time you must give them the scent of the lioness." They were quiet for the rest of the night, lost in their own thoughts and memories. At the first light of dawn they reached a tiny oasis, and Taita called a halt among the date palms. The animals were fed and watered while the tents were erected. As soon as they were alone in the main tent, Taita asked, "Would you like to rest a while, Demeter, before we make the next attempt, or are you ready to begin at once?" "I have rested all night. I am ready now." Taita studied the other's face. He seemed calm, and his pale eyes were serene. Taita held up the periapt of Lostris. "Your eyes grow heavy. Let them close. You feel quiet and secure. Your limbs are heavy. You are very comfortable. You listen to my voice, and you feel sleep coming over you. Blessed sleep. Deep, healing sleep." Demeter dropped away more swiftly than he had on their first attempt. He was becoming increasingly susceptible to Taita's quiet suggestion. "There is a mountain that breathes fire and smoke. Do you see it?" For a moment Demeter was deathly still. His lips paled and quivered. Then he shook his head in wild denial. "There is no mountain. I see no mountain." His voice rose and cracked. "There is a woman on the mountain,"
Taita persisted. "A beautiful woman, the most beautiful woman on earth. Do you see her, Demeter?" Demeter began to pant like a dog, his chest pumping like the bellows of a coppersmith. Taita felt that he was losing him. Demeter was fighting the trance, trying to break out of it. He knew that this must be their last attempt, for the old man was unlikely to survive another. "Can you hear her voice, Demeter? Listen to the sweet music of her words. What is she saying to you?" Now Demeter was wrestling with an invisible opponent, rolling about on his mattress. He drew his knees and elbows up to his chest and curled his body into a ball. Then his limbs shot out straight and his back arched. He babbled with the voices of madmen. He gibbered and giggled. He gnashed his teeth until one shattered at the back of his jaw, then spat out the shards in a mixture of blood and saliva. "Peace, Demeter!" Panic rose in Taita, like a pot coming to the boil. "Be still! You are safe again!" Demeter's breathing eased, and then he spoke unexpectedly in the arcane tenmas of the adepts. His words were strange, but his tone was even more so. His voice was no longer that of an old man, but of a young woman, sweet and melodious, as musical as Taita had ever heard. "Fire, air, water, and earth, but the lord of these is fire." Every languid inflection engraved itself into Taita's mind. He knew he would never erase the sound. Demeter collapsed back upon the mattress. The rigidity left his body. His eyes fluttered closed, his breathing stilled, and his chest ceased heaving. Taita feared that his heart must have burst. But when he placed his ear on his ribs, he heard it beating to a muted but regular rhythm. With a surge of relief, he realized that Demeter had survived. Taita let him sleep for the rest of the day. When Demeter awoke, he seemed unaffected by his ordeal. Indeed, he made no reference to what had passed and seemed to have no memory of it. While they shared a bowl of stewed suckling goat, the two men discussed the day-to-day affairs of the caravan. They tried to estimate how far they had come from Galala, and how soon they would reach the splendid palace of Pharaoh Nefer-Seti. Taita had sent a messenger ahead to alert the king to their arrival, and they wondered how he would receive them. "Pray to Ahura Mazda, the one true light, that no more plagues have been sent to torment that poor afflicted land," Demeter said, then fell silent. "Fire, air, water, and earth," said Taita in a conversational tone. "But the lord of these is fire," Demeter responded, like a schoolboy reciting a lesson by rote. His hand flew up to cover his mouth, and he stared at Taita with astonishment in his old eyes. At last he asked, shaken, "Fire, air, water, and earth, the four essential elements of creation. Why do you name them, Taita?" "First tell me, Demeter, why you named fire as the lord of all."
"The prayer," Demeter whispered. "The incantation."
"Whose prayer? What incantation?"
Demeter turned pale as he tried to remember. "I know not." His voice trembled as he tried to unearth painful memories. "I have never heard it before."
"You have." Now Taita spoke with the voice of the Inquisitor. "Think, Demeter, where? Who?" Then suddenly Taita changed his tone again. He could mimic perfectly the voices of others. He spoke now in the heartbreakingly lovely feminine voice that Demeter had used in his trance. "But the lord of these is fire." Demeter gasped and clapped his hands over his ears.
"No!" he screamed. "When you use that voice, you blaspheme. You commit loathsome sacrilege. That is the voice of the lie, the voice of Eos, the witch."
He sank back and sobbed brokenly. Taita waited silently for him to recover. At last he raised his head and said, "May Ahura Mazda have mercy on me and forgive me my weakness. How could I have forgotten that awful utterance?"
"Demeter, you did not forget. The memory was denied to you," Taita said gently. "Now you must recall all of it, swiftly, before Eos intrudes once more and stifles it.
But the lord of these is fire." "That was the incantation with which she opened her most unholy rituals," Demeter whispered.
"This was at Etna?" "I knew her at no other place."
"She exalted fire in the place of fire," Taito was thoughtful. She mustered her powers in the heart of the volcano. The fire is part of her strength, but she has gone from the source of her power. Yet we know that it has been resuscitated. Do you see that you have answered our question? We know now where we must search for her. Demeter was evidently bewildered. We must look for her in the fire, in the volcano, Taita explained. Demeter seemed to rally his thoughts. Yes, I see it, he said. Let us ride this horse further, Taita exclaimed. The volcano possesses three of the elements, fire, earth, and air. It lacks only water. Etna was beside the sea. If she has found another volcano as her lair, there must be a large body of water close at hand. The sea? Asked Demeter. Or a great river, Taita suggested. A volcano beside the sea, on an island perhaps, or near a great lake. That is where we must seek her. He placed an arm around Demeter's shoulders and smiled at him fondly. So, Demeter, despite your denials, you knew all along where she is hiding. I give myself little credit. It took your genius to draw it from my failing memory, Demeter said. But tell me, Taita, by how little have we narrowed the area of our search? How many volcanoes are there that fit that description? He paused, then answered his own question. They must be legion, and certainly they will be separated by vast tracts of land and sea. It might take years to journey to them all, and I fear I lack the strength now for such endeavour. Over the centuries, the Brotherhood of Priests in the Temple of Hathor at Thebes has made an intimate study of the Earth's surface. They possess detailed maps of the seas and oceans, the mountains and rivers. In my travels, I gathered information that I passed on to them. So they and I are well acquainted with each other. They will provide us with a list of all the known volcanoes situated close to water. I do not believe we will have to travel to each one. You and I can combine our powers to sound each mountain from afar for the emanations of evil. We will have to contain our patience and husband our resources until we reach the Temple of Hathor, then. This conflict with Eos is draining to the dregs even the deep cup of your strength and fortitude. You too must rest, Taita, Demeter counselled. You have not slept for 2 days, and we have barely taken the first steps on the long, hard road to ferret her out. At this point, Meron carried a bundle of perfumed desert grass into their living tent and arranged it to form a mattress. Over it he spread the tiger skin. He knelt to remove his master's sandals and loosen the belt of his tunic, but Taita snapped at him. I'm not a puling infant, Meron. I can undress myself. Meron smiled indulgently as he eased him back upon the mattress. We know that you are not, Magus. Strange is it not how often you behave like one? Taita opened his mouth to protest, but instead gave a soft snore, and in an instant dropped into a deep sleep. He has watched over me while I slept. Now I will attend him, good Meron, Demeter said. That is my duty, Meron said, still watching Taita. You can protect him from man and beast. No one could do that better, Demeter said, but if he is attacked through the occult, you will be helpless. Good Meron, take your bow and bring us a fat gazelle for our dinner. Meron hovered a little longer beside Taita, then sighed and stooped out through the flap of the tent. Demeter settled beside Taita's mattress.